Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 139, Clearing the Neighbourhood. Yes, it's time once again to dive into Cheap Astronomy's wacky scheme to crash asteroids on the moon as a mining strategy. This time, we not only suggest that it could save money, but it could also save the world. Dear Cheap Astronomy, can we really clear all the potentially hazardous objects from around Earth? A key feature of Cheap Astronomy's CSOTM proposal, Crash on the Moon, is that the most readily available source of to crash are near-Earth asteroids and a small number of comets. This has the double benefit of putting all the raw materials in one place, plus you are clearing out potentially hazardous objects that could collide with Earth at some time in the future. It's currently estimated there are around 19 potentially hazardous objects that do carry a small but measurable risk of colliding with Earth in the next 100 years, and all are well under 1 kilometer in diameter, so do seem like good candidates to crash on the moon, insofar as their small size should make them relatively easy to move and more likely to properly crash, rather than fragmenting into rebounding shrapnel or create an orbiting lunar dust cloud. And of course, if you do somehow bollocks things up so badly that you send these objects on a trajectory towards Earth, they at least aren't big enough to be mass extinction objects. One good example is the infamous Apophis, which was a worry insofar as it was calculated to have an almost 3% risk of colliding with Earth in 2029, but now after further observation and calculation, it's no longer considered at all likely to impact the Earth within the next 100 years, and it's only 40 meters in diameter anyway. So, if we're looking for a poster asteroid for CSOTM, it's Apophis. The second poster asteroid in line is probably Bennu, which also has pretty much no chance of hitting Earth in the next 100 years, although it's more worrisome if it did, being about 0.5 kilometer in diameter. So we'd want to be well advanced in CSOTM procedures before taking on something this substantial. If it's not ringing any bells, Bennu was visited by the OSIRIS-REx spacecraft in 2018, which stayed there for about 2 years and collected a sample in 2020, which was returned to Earth in 2023. The spacecraft has now been renamed OSIRIS-APEX and will visit Apophis in 2029. The spacecraft no longer has a sample collection and return device, but the plan is to have a good look around Apophis and probably blast its surface with retrofire so that we get a peek at its subsurface composition. We know from seeing Bennu up close and collecting a sample that it's a carbonaceous rubble pile asteroid, meaning it's more like dry clay than rock or metal, and it's a collection of small, loosely bound particles rather than one solid object. This is likely to be a common finding amongst near-Earth objects, although we won't really know until we get a closer look at each one, and we should expect we will find a bit of variety out there. Nonetheless, there's limited value in collecting samples from each one if we're just going to crash them on the moon anyway, so perhaps we'll just have robot scouts with cameras to take a few snaps before attaching a rocket engine and sending them plunging to their doom on the moon's surface. We assume most asteroids are clay, rock or metal, or some combination of those three, based on general observations of all the asteroids we can see, either in space or crashed on Earth, where some, or bits of some, do survive the impact with Earth, as they've been initially slowed down by our atmosphere. However, let's remember that some near-Earth and potentially hazardous objects are comets, which are mostly water or carbon dioxide ice, though they may have a rocky core. If we crash those comets on the moon, Some of the water ice might be heated sufficiently by the impact to dissociate into hydrogen and oxygen, and some of it would just vaporize and then fall back to the surface as widely dispersed fine particles of ice, or otherwise be blown out into space by the solar wind. So, if you crash water ice, it will be mostly irretrievable. This might be less the case with carbon dioxide ice, but there's not much economic value in carbon dioxide. So, perhaps with comets, we'll just steer them into lunar orbit and harvest the water from them, if that seems economically viable, which would still mean we mostly dismantle that object and eliminate its risk to Earth anyway. Again, it's all about economics. Mining potentially hazardous near-Earth objects in their solar orbits sounds very slow and fiddly and doesn't really deal with the fundamental problem of them being ticking time bombs, waiting to crash on Earth. Crashing them on the Moon at least takes them out of the picture and leaves most of their raw material on the surface, some of which could be potentially mineable and no longer hazardous.
This is the middle bit.
It is hard to imagine a high-technology vision of humanity's future where we'll just leave a bunch of civilization-destroying rocks to continue floating out there. So if we are going to get rid of them anyway, why not make a few bucks in the process? And that all sounds great, but how we actually make it happen is a whole different question. Dear Cheap Astronomy, can we really deflect asteroids with rocket engines? This is a follow-up episode to our recent one about crashing near-Earth objects on the Moon, where a listener wrote in to critique a throwaway line we made about attaching a rocket engine to an asteroid, particularly if it was a rubble pile asteroid. They were too polite to say it's a dumbass idea, but yeah, it probably is a dumbass idea. Well, sort of maybe. The age of asteroid deflection is really with us now after the success of NASA missions like DART and Deep Impact. China is planning to launch an as yet unnamed asteroid deflection mission, and otherwise there are a lot of good ideas out there about how to either deflect or fragment an asteroid on a seeming collision course with Earth, and none of them involve attaching rocket engines. And here's a fun fact for you. Since the Earth's orbital speed around the Sun is 30 meters a second, and the Earth is nearly 13,000 kilometers in diameter, it takes about 7 minutes for the Earth to move one planetary diameter. So if an object is on a collision course with Earth, all you have to do is either delay or advance its arrival by up to 7 minutes, and it will miss. Indeed, if it was heading for the midpoint of Earth's planetary disk, you'd just have to shift its arrival by 3.5 minutes. It's also the case that the earlier you shift its trajectory, the less you have to shift it by. One suggested strategy, which does need a large amount of lead time, is to paint part of an asteroid, which will change its surface radiation absorption properties. Normally, a sun-heated asteroid radiates that heat away, hence giving it a small push, which is known as the Yarkovsky effect. Painting some or all of the asteroid with a reflective paint stops that long-term effect and also gains a more immediate effect by acting like a solar sail. All this really guarantees is that there will be some change in the asteroid's trajectory. Which direction it moves in is largely unpredictable, particularly if the asteroid is spinning. And so, painting is largely useless as a method of directing the asteroid to a particular target, like crashing on the Moon, for example. A more accurate method is a gravity tug, essentially a moderate-sized spacecraft which flies close to the asteroid so that its mass generates enough gravity to pull the asteroid off its previous trajectory. This method can be used to steer the asteroid onto a definite alternate course, and that course can continue to be modified further, either by the same tug or by successive rendezvous with different tugs. However, like painting, this method will only very slightly modify an asteroid's trajectory, so you have to start with a lot of lead time, particularly for larger asteroids. So, if you don't have a lot of lead time, there's the kinetic impact method, where you crash something into the asteroid, imparting a kinetic energy which is derived both from the mass and the velocity of the thing that hits the asteroid. This was measurably successful with the DART mission in 2022. So with this method, you can be confident of achieving a change in the asteroid's trajectory, but it's still not ideal for steering the asteroid onto a particular trajectory, since the effect of each impact will be a bit unpredictable. So, if you do want a fast and accurate trajectory-altering method, this is where a rocket engine comes in. It's by far the least energy-efficient, and hence would be the most costly of all the options mentioned so far. Part of the problem is that you'll need fuel and propellant, so the rocket engine not only has to shift the asteroid's mass, but also its own mass, plus a sizable fuel tank. And so, that leads us to perhaps the best of all options, a mass driver, which would be some kind of electromagnetic slingshot device that you'd load up with bits of the asteroid, firing them off into space and hence gaining a push in the opposite direction. And so, no fuel or propellant is needed. This approach would be most useful for rubble pile asteroids, where large chunks of rock will be readily available to fire into space. So you just land the catapult, which might be sufficiently powered by solar arrays and a bank of rechargeable batteries, and it would use an attached robotic arm to grab and load up nearby chunks of rock. Piece of cake.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Cheap astronomy saves the world with high-tech catapults. Of course, that approach just replaces big potentially hazardous objects with lots more small potentially hazardous objects, but small potentially hazardous objects are only a bit hazardous since they will mostly burn up in Earth's atmosphere. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to fling some dross into outer space, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll load it up for you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.